Actually, I don't really want to talk about profiling. No, I'm just kidding. I was talking on the other side about synchronicities and how they work, and that I didn't make the universe. I just track in it. I just wanted to let you know that if you've ever noticed, the logo of Wilderness Awareness School has a fox in it. That has something to do with the fact that there's been a lot of synchronicity around the school and foxes, and not just me, but many other people. I think that has to do with the whole idea of what coyote teaching is really all about. And as a scout, as a person who learns to be invisible in the forest, your best role models become the coyote, the fox, and the wolf. You can say that we practice wolf medicine or coyote medicine at the school, in that we kind of capture the strategy and the mindset of these animals and use them as a technique, not only to approach the forest, but also to approach the way we teach. So, remind you again that if you want to get to know more about this kind of stuff and actually get deeper into it, you would really enjoy Tom Brown's books, Vision and Awakening Spirits, and as well his awareness classes and his philosophy classes. They get into this in a pretty good way. I'd recommend that you get out there and do some dirt time, though, before you head over there. I said before, early on in the series, that this is the path that helps you get to know who you really are. Ingwe talks about how the wilderness helps you find yourself. And it absolutely has everything to do with what bird language is all about. It has to do with quieting the mind and learning about who you are through your discomforts and through what we call the rites of passage of fear, the rites of passage of loneliness, you know, the ability to sit alone in the forest. Ingwe talks about sitting alone in the city makes him feel lonely, but when he sits alone in the wilderness, he calls it solitude, and it has a whole different meaning. You know, the wilderness wraps around you like a warm blanket. The Mother Earth wraps around you like a warm blanket, and it really feeds the spirit. So, may I also say now that as you journey to become more and more sensitive to the bird language around you, you will begin to be able to tell the mood of a song sparrow at 200 yards. And you might think to yourself, well, wow, that's really cool. This is a great advantage that I'm going to have. But realize that when you become that sensitive to the most subtle things around you in the landscape, that society is going to suddenly seem loud in a way that it never has before. In our school, we refer to this phenomenon as the wall of grief. At the tracker school, they call it the tracker syndrome. And what it really is about is that tuning your antenna to really understand the subtle and almost unheard voices of nature makes you very susceptible to discomfort in the modern experience. That's something you're just going to have to learn to live with. There is no magic pill that I can say, well, yeah, that isn't going to happen, and just push this button and it'll go away. It's just something that all of us, and myself included, have had to learn to deal with. The best thing for you to do is to make sure that you surround yourself with friends who are on the same path as you, who are also learning to become really empathetic and sensitive in the same way. That way you can express yourself to them, and you won't be looked at as odd or strange. I know that when I've had the worst experiences when I've tried to express my feelings to people who don't understand the same thing because they haven't made it important in their life, and I'm looked at as funny, or I feel a lot of demoralizing pressure from that. So I would recommend that you kind of keep your circle of friends around you that also appreciate what it is that you're learning to do here. We try to be real sensitive to that in our independent study programs. Our instructors are trained to look for that as people express themselves in their field assignments and their response papers. We can see the symptoms of that arising, and we try to help people with that just by letting them know that they're not alone. So remember, you're not alone. That it's not you. There's not something wrong with you. If you're feeling very sensitive and uncomfortable in certain modern situations, it's probably not you. You're not the first. You're one in thousands now who was expressing the same feelings. One day we'll come up with a special chewing gum that you can chew on that will help you with this condition. But for now, it's still in the developmental phase. It might be a few years, probably after the next Star Wars episode comes out. Okay, so I want to talk about one of our advanced students right now, because she really demonstrates a lot of what the bird language is all about. her name is Donegan. I got her permission to mention her name, that Donegan Murdoch has been going to her secret spot faithfully for about 3 years now, almost every day. She tries to get out there sometimes at 4:30 in the morning to beat the dawn chorus and just to be out there on a regular routine basis. And she is a person who has amazing good experiences out in the forest. When we get to talking about profiles, you'll hear her name again. She recently won a scout contest during a scout camp, and she doesn't particularly fancy herself as someone who would like to be a scout. That is, someone who's really good at hiding. But she happens to be very good at it, and she was explaining to me that she was very successful. She won the game where she collected a marble from every person that she caught by surprise. And she was up against other community school students who were practicing bird language skills also. But she was one of the instructors at the bird language class. She was a more advanced student with more experience, and she ended up winning with 12 marbles. I think the next closest person was also a community school student, and they had 8 or something like that. And a lot of people who prided themselves on their scout abilities previously were pretty well embarrassed by Donegan in the community school. Her ability simply comes from going out there and doing this all the time, making observations. And she called and shared a story with me today to make sure that I got it out there to you. She said the bird language helped her again today because a cat had caught a baby rabbit, and she was trying to get the baby rabbit away from the cat, and the cat kept running into the thicket. And no matter where the cat went, she could find it because the cat birds kept telling her where the cat was, and the robins kept saying, "Here's the cat." She said the alarms were amazing because they were absolutely freaking out over the fact that this cat was holding this baby rabbit that was struggling for its life. So she was able to, using bird language, eventually get the cat. She caught the cat, she got the rabbit away from it, and then she sat with the rabbit for a couple of hours until it recovered, and she released it in another area where it was safer. So she was just emphasizing that. She's a person who always sees foxes and coyotes in the forest and deer, and she'll see things, and then people will go right in there after her and not see anything. And she has the same kind of reputation. I wonder if she's making all this up, you know, but it's not that she's making anything up. She's actually just practicing these skills, and she's getting real good at it. And I had this demonstrated to me really clearly one day at Camp Don Bosco when we were teaching the art of mentoring. I was walking along with Donega as we were heading towards the dining hall, and there was a robin singing in a tree. And the robin was singing in a lower branch, and as we walked up towards this robin, it kept singing. And as we passed under the robin, we were only just 3-4 feet beneath it, it continued to sing. And that was the first time I'd ever walked with another human being that didn't scare the robin and stop it from singing. So I wondered about that, and I thought, well, I wonder maybe if the robin is just brain damaged or if Donegan really is at that profile. And behind us were two more people who were walking, and they were talking quietly and sort of in conversation, similar to the way we were. We were just taking a break and heading for the dining hall. So I noticed as they got closer to the robin stopped singing, and as they got closer, the robin made an alarm call and flew out of the tree. So again, nothing physically different seemed to be going on for the two of us walking versus the two of them. And I then was sort of shown by the birds themselves that Donega had reached that profile that I'm going to mention later on. We'll call it Mirvana for now. She's approaching Mirvana. So let's just put it this way. She gets to see a lot of creatures, and she'll see them 5 minutes after people have just left the same spot. And I have the same kind of luck. So I'm glad that she's out there teaching bird language now. She's real excited to be following up on this knowledge. And we're all lucky to have people interested in keeping this going. So when we talk about the 6 profiles, I might also mention a 7th one. Tom Brown likes to talk about people's level of awareness also. He refers to this in terms of biofeedback. He talks about grandfather Stalking Wolf's 4 worlds. He refers to these 4 worlds that people have, or the worlds of grandfather, and grandfather Stalking Wolf always talked about them as sort of concentric rings, that the further you developed your awareness, the further out on these rings you were. The center of this whole thing is the world which grandfather calls the land of the living dead. And it's in that profile where somebody's, if you measure their biofeedback, you'll find out that their brain waves are operating at beta, which is a very sort of scattered and sort of intense brainwave, that seems to be repulsive to wildlife and repulsive to birds. And this is the level I was talking about earlier, where someone's walking outside thinking about things and just kind of wandering around in the forest, not thinking there's anything going on, that they're very self-absorbed, they're very much kind of what we'd have to say self-centered, to the point of shutting out the world around them. They're almost, you know, I quote Tom, you know, that they're essentially kind of walking in arrogance. They just have this way about them, that they seem to have this right to be there. And Ingwe talks about that also, that it's their right to do whatever they want, you know, and that kind of energy is very kind of harmful to the peace of baseline around you. So what those people basically experience is that they're not really seeing anything in the forest. And a lot of times they often sort of hate the woods. You know, I can't stand the woods. There's ticks or there's mosquitoes or there's poison ivy. And I only come here to jog or I only come here to walk through, but I'm not really interested in it. Besides, there's nothing living here anyway. Those same people might go home at night and watch a nature show and actually really enjoy seeing a fox on the TV screen, but never think that they could have that experience. So this is the level that leads up to first hearing that there is such a thing as bird language. After listening to this tape series, you might find that you're immediately going to change in one way, and that's obvious. So kind of the level one band includes this change, and that is that once you know bird language is happening and it's firmly entrenched in your mind that it's a possibility, you become paranoid. I mean, just basically that's what happens. You start to think, oh my God, I am not alone out here. Everything is watching me. Well, you should have that feeling because that's an accurate feeling. You know, is it a game of hide and seek? Yeah, it really is a game of hide and seek. But I'll tell you right now that that paranoia is better than nothing. And it's the beginning of your change in profile, because as soon as you stop only being directed into your own thought process, as if you're the only thing that matters, you start walking around in the forest, you're going to have to look around some. You're going to have to notice more things. You're going to have to slow down a little bit. And that's the beginning of the feedback that I'm talking about that will alter you. You'll start to notice right away that you're seeing more wildlife simply because you're not so caught up in your head anymore. And it's not to say that this is like a form of meditation right away, boom, you're fixed. No more thought process, now I'm in living in bliss and peace. It doesn't happen that quickly, but it does happen very effectively from this practice, very effectively. So what I like to call level two is that it's a person who has focused enough on bird language, their paranoia has really taken hold, that they're actually mechanically, that is physically, avoiding creating bird language using the routine of invisibility. They're actually literally avoiding alarming birds because they see one up ahead, and like the elephant and the plover, they make the choice to go around. So they are mechanically altering the bird language around them. And that's what I call level two. Now, the way I recognize level two is because these people are no longer causing that primary alarm thing that I was talking about earlier, the bird plow effect. They're no longer causing that intense run from this creature because it's dangerous effect in the forest. They're beginning to experience the bird hook experience. That is, the birds are not flying away from them in sheer terror, but they're beginning to fly respectfully above them and give them their space. As a result of that, what's happening is that the animals are no longer being given that early warning system. You know, whereas the deer in that forest used to be given a full 2-minute warning by the bird plow alarm that used to attend that person, those deer are no longer being given that advanced warning. And what happens is the deer are now caught in their day beds, realizing as they're hearing the person approach that the person got a lot closer than they're comfortable with. Because if you think about the deer who live around a suburban neighborhood, most people don't know bird language, so that they're not going to really ever get close to deer. The deer always have plenty of warning. But if all of a sudden you as a scout in training begins to change your profile a little bit, you're going to actually have to teach the deer now. The deer are going to have to respond to you differently than the way they used to. They used to be comfortable that you're going to scare the bird so far in advance that they had plenty of warning to get out of there or to hide. Now what's happening is you're getting close to the deer before the deer know you're there, and now the deer have to sneak away from you. Now, when a deer jumps up out of its day bed and starts to sneak off, even though you haven't seen it, the effect is still the same. The blue jay, or the Steller's jay, is going to see that sneaking deer, and it's going to fly over the deer and give an alarm. And the sneaking deer is going to cause the chipmunk to be nervous, and the chipmunk's going to give an alarm. And the song sparrow is going to give an alarm as the deer in its really intense body language sneaks away from you. Just like the Carolina wren did with the gray fox earlier on the tapes. So what you're going to hear now at your second level of bird language awareness, you're no longer going to be seeing bird butts flying away from you in terror, which is a level one profile. What you're now going to start to see is that the birds are still feeding around you somewhat. You're not scaring them because you're mechanically avoiding them, but you're beginning to hear alarm calls 20 yards away from you. And there's a really funny response to this. I can't tell you, almost 100% of the time, people who have reported this to me have always said, oh my God, are my thoughts that bad that I'm causing alarms at 20 yards? They start to think that way. But the bottom line here is that the alarms used to be 200 yards ahead of them, and they never heard the alarms. What's happening now is that those alarms are getting closer. So they're actually being more successful, but they're perceiving that they're more of a, you know, drain on the forest than ever, because now the alarms are 20 yards away. Oh my God, I must have terrible thoughts if that's what I'm causing out there. But that's not the case at all. What's going on is these are secondary alarms. A deer that's seen you coming too late to sneak away safely now has to sneak away when you're within earshot of it, and it's going to cause secondary alarms. The deer sneaking is a source of alarm. Or the fox sneaking away from you is a source of alarm. And you'll notice that 20 to 50 yards around you as you move through the forest, you hear alarms going off in the thickets. Believe me, that's not you. Birds are totally interested in conservation of energy. So if you're creating alarms in a secondary fashion 20 to 50 yards out there, believe me, they don't care that you're 20 to 50 yards away. The song sparrow doesn't care that you're that far away, especially if you're mechanically being respectful like the elephants and the plover. So that makes sense to you, that you're not really the cause of that alarm. You're the cause of the deer's alarm, which is creating alarm in the birds around the deer. That's what we call a secondary alarm. That's a second profile experience. Okay, so what you're beginning to experience here also is that because you have to be ultimately paranoid when you're mechanically altering your steps through the forest, you're really quieting your brain. And not because it's a natural process for you, but because you have to listen hard, you have to look hard, you have to really pay attention. And in order to really pay attention, you can't be thinking at the same time. So you are also mechanically stopping yourself from being caught up in that beta brainwave. So after I'm done explaining this profile thing, I will review the routine of invisibility and explain to you again how this works. But after you've been practicing the routine of invisibility for a while, and let's say you go to your secret spot every day, you're going to start to notice that the secondary alarms are no longer happening. And now you're really going to think that you stink. Because what's going to happen is, as you approach a really authentic alpha level brain state, that is what Grandfather Stalking Wolf would call the second world, the world of the force or the sacred silence or the spirit that moves in all things, you're getting in touch with the silence of the forest around you as well as the silence of your own being. So this is where you really begin to know yourself. By going in the forest every day and practicing mechanical avoidance of the birds and really listening to the routine of invisibility, you will actually internalize a silent mind. You will achieve what's called the sacred silence, or what you would call in biofeedback an alpha brain state, which is a much more relaxed, calm, easy to learn brain state where you're very much at peace with yourself. And that's a very vital part of this. When you develop a peaceful internal feeling and you really get through some of your own kind of rites of passage of fear, rites of passage of loneliness, all the discomforts that you experience at your secret spot until you get past them, that's when you enter that third level, that third profile. You begin to have a different vibe around you. You're much more relaxed and calm, similar to a child who's never been taken from the forest. The child can kind of go out and play and absorb themselves and play in the forest for long periods of time and just kind of have a dreamy, drifty sort of presence. That's a non-offensive presence in the forest. That's what you're achieving at that point, and it's natural now. You're not mechanically doing it. It's just coming from within you. You're radiating it, just like you're returning to your childhood. At that point, the reason you're not hearing secondary alarms anymore is because the deer hear you coming. They know you're coming. They lift up their head for a minute, look at you, and say, oh, that person's vibe is really good. They're not very harmful. They're just like a child. They're innocent. I think I'll just stay here and continue to sleep. So instead of having deer sneak away from your alpha state, the deer are now accepting you, and they're not sneaking away from you, nor is the fox, nor is the coyote. They're just staying put as you pass by. They haven't learned to entirely trust you yet, but at the same time, they're no longer fearing you. That's why it's quiet in the forest. The baseline of the birds is not disturbed at all. You've essentially become invisible at that point. Okay? So that's the third level. At level four, you begin to see things that you've never seen before. You begin to realize that the deer aren't hiding from you, okay? But you're beginning to see the doe and her fawn a lot. Or you're seeing certain bears, but you're not seeing all the bears. You're not capable of seeing anything you want, but what's happening is the forest is feeding back to you that it doesn't fear you anymore, and that certain of the animals even trust you, and they don't move when you come. They actually stay there. So you find yourself not only avoiding juncos. Used to be in the very beginning, back at level two, you see juncos feeding, so you pause and wait for them to finish feeding, and then you go around them, like the elephant and the plover. At level three, you're still practicing that physically, and the birds aren't moving from you anymore. In fact, you notice they're not stopping their singing. But now what's happening is even rarer species are beginning to show themselves to you. You're starting to see birds you never saw before, and you're also starting to see certain mammals that never allowed themselves to be seen before. Okay, so they're starting to show up on a regular basis in your path. You haven't really seen the intense old ones or anything like that. You haven't seen the wise ones of the forest yet. But you're beginning to see animals that used to not allow you to see them. And the next tape, I'm going to explain that progression a little more, and I think you'll understand why that happens. It's almost like you're being allowed into a secret world, and in a way you are. You're being inducted into a society. You know, the natural society, the animals are allowing you to enter their world. You're being respected. It's a really neat thing to have happen. Okay, so this is when that synchronicity experience I was talking about earlier might become really evident to you. Might become evident that it's more than just sort of a happenstance thing. It's actually beginning to take a pattern on. At this point, that alpha state that I described, you can do it at will. In fact, you probably will shift at that point into living in alpha instead of living in beta and going to alpha when you're tired. You might find that living in alpha is what you really want to do. You want to maintain the sacred silence under all circumstances. And this is where that empathy experience is starting to maximize, too. This is what I was talking about earlier. At this point, if you want to grow to the next level, it's important for you to develop a thankful attitude. At this point, it's very, very important for you to begin to internalize a practice that does not direct any negative thoughts or judgments towards anything around you, but becomes very peaceful and tranquil, as well as, you know, allow things to have their space, allow things to have their freedom. And begin to experience a thankful lifestyle. The Thanksgiving Address, as taught on the Native Eyes tapes, is a helpful tool for this. And you'll have to learn it to become an independent study student anyway. And the reason we do that is because it speeds people through the profile. If people practice the Thanksgiving Address on a regular basis, and they can adapt it to suit their needs. It doesn't have to be done the way that it's taught in the Kamana program. We encourage people to integrate it into whatever religious view they have, whatever scientific view they have. Just take these things and allow them to become your own. Integrate them into your own life. A practice of thankfulness is very, very important. At level four, you'll begin to see the wisdom in Stalking Wolf's recommendations to Tom, as what Tom calls the self-analysis cycle. That when you go into the forest, the first thing you do is pray. You know, that you go into the forest and pray, that as you focus your mind in a particular manner, why am I here, what do I need, what are my greatest needs, and at that point you begin to reflect and introspect on the things that are in your mind's eye, and then you give thanks and you meditate. That is, you go into your senses and you just sort of practice a sacred silence meditation, which isn't really a meditation like you would learn, from TM or something like that. It's more like you're tuning into your senses, all of your senses at the same time. You're practicing a peaceful state of mind, and that just comes naturally from practicing bird language awareness. So at that level four, you start to realize that some form of spiritual practice becomes very important to you because your empathy is so intense that you have to constantly clean your mind. So then comes nirvana, what we call level five. Now, the observation has been made that somebody like Merv Wilkinson, who caretakes a piece of land for 50 years out there up in British Columbia, Vancouver, has been lovingly tending that forest like a giant garden for most of his life there, really caretaking it in a beautiful way. And his lifestyle is so laid back. I mean, he lives off the land. He doesn't have the stresses that most of us experience in the modern world. He's not really thinking about bills and about, his mortgage and his car and all these things that we have to stress ourselves out over. He has inherited a peaceful lifestyle. So his whole life is peaceful. His whole life is sort of a giant secret spot experience. You know, he's constantly out there. He's constantly part of his land. Because of that, there's two things going on. One, his vibe is real centered and real peaceful. But two, he's very, very centered on love and respect for that particular land. He has what's called a caretaker's attitude. And that caretaker's attitude is what's beyond thankfulness. After you practice enough thankfulness and really learn to appreciate what's around you, the next thing that you're going to grow into is this desire, this internal need to leave it better than you found it. That you yourself are a caretaker. You've been given, inherited, if you will, or borrowing from your grandchildren the land that you live on. And with that caretaking, loving, respectful attitude, you begin to put out an even more inviting presence around yourself, a more inviting vibration. And that's why somebody like Merv has animals kind of feeding right around him while he's working out there. While he's, maybe cutting a tree up or something, he's got deer feeding right next to him. I've even heard reports of a time when he had to kind of avoid, this buck was sort of walking right past him as he was working, and they were sort of in each other's way, that it's like people will go their whole life wishing they could see a buck in the forest, and Merv and this buck are sort of kind of like getting in each other's way while they're out there working. They're so well connected. That's what happens. I mean, you are beginning at that realm to enter the third world of grandfather, the realm of spirit, and as he calls it, and this is where your brain waves are starting to approach theta. Now, Tom Brown likes to point out that most people in biofeedback experiments are more or less drooling and unconscious when they're in theta. But he always talked about Stalking Wolf and how Stalking Wolf could get to that theta brain wave while in his life. I mean, he could be playing, enjoying, dancing, running, working on a bow drill and still maintain that theta brain wave. Stalking Wolf always felt that in order for a meditation to be useful, it needed to be a dynamic meditation. A meditation, in other words, that could be part of your everyday experience. The theta brainwave, the realm of the spirit, is a very powerful place. Your healing ability increases dramatically. Your learning ability reaches an enormous ability, according to biofeedback at that time. At that point, that's why elders of native tribes are so powerfully respected, because they have achieved that same level of awareness in their life. They're able to inspire and hold tradition and know things that don't seem to be knowable by normal standards. But practicing bird language until you're, an elder, till your hair begins to turn white, you will start to have experiences that are way beyond commonplace. So that's what we call nirvana. When you approach nirvana, when you start to have these amazing experiences, you evolve the spirit of the caretaker. You're always thankful. Thankful becomes your background awareness level, and you're able to go in and out of meditation at will, even while you're doing things, actively pursuing other things. It's at that point when you'll begin to have incredibly powerful experiences with wildlife. At that point, I like to point out that this is where the native hunter was. This is their profile, that they were able to know the animal so well that they were literally able to call the animals to them at this point. And they could hunt animals with this tremendous love and respect for life, yet they were able to still take life. They had this enormous appreciation that can only be gained from being so aware and so powerfully brain patterned on the knowledge of animals themselves, that at that point, when they took a life, it was a very sacred event. That they couldn't slap a mosquito easily at that point in their life, because all life was sacred. They had a very, very intense and caring attitude. So it seems like what we would call sort of paradox, that a native hunter could have so much love and respect for life, but I know it to be true. So that enters us into level six, the realm, the land of the shaman, as Grandfather Stalking Wolf would call it. This is where the delta brainwave begins. And again, this is going to happen from spending a lot of time in the forest alone and really paying attention. This is where I believe, St. Francis was at, where not only did he not repel things, but they came and landed on him. The birds actually landed on him. I always think of my friend Tony Tenfingers. He's one of the founders of our school, too. He's a Lakota, also from Pine Ridge. He talked a lot about one of his relatives who would go out on the hill to pray with a sacred pipe, and a hawk would land on his shoulder while he was praying. You know, this is very much beyond normal for Western standards. And in fact, people who observed that, the missionaries even went so far as to say that people who had that kind of power were actually working with the devil, which is an unfortunate misrepresentation of what's going on. I mean, our own St. Francis from the Catholic tradition was the same kind of person. He was so prayerful and so spiritually powerful that he called the animals and birds to him. So that's a whole different ball game. And I don't expect, after listening to this tape set once, that you're going to have these experiences anyway. And you can just kind of leave them out there as level six experiences in the realm of possibility, or maybe call them mythology or lore, whatever you want to do with them. But don't discount their possibility. It is entirely possible that these things could happen. The seventh level, which I said I might mention, you could read about in the book called The Vision, and Tom talks about it as entering the veils. And this is a level of invisibility that the scouts practiced, where they could hide like ninjas in plain sight, if you will, that they could actually physically alter their presence. And as Tom says in the book, he doesn't know whether they're physically invisible or spiritually invisible. He's not quite sure how it really works, because from his own perception, he doesn't notice anything different. And I've had this experience many times, and I remember once sitting up in the top of a tree and practicing this form of invisibility when all these crows landed right around me in the tree. And I've always known crows to be extremely wary of me. And here they were landing within 3 feet of me, and they were looking right through me as if I wasn't there. And I wondered if I was actually invisible. So I started to alter my mind state by thinking about something, and the crows right away looked at me and flew off and cawed. So even though physically I was looking at my own hand holding onto the tree trunk, it never disappeared. Somehow, when you approach that brain wave, that you're actually able to become invisible somehow. I mean, I don't know that you're actually physically disappearing, but from the crow's perception, you're somehow not visible. And I've had the same experience with dogs and deer. It just seems to be something you figure out after a while from practicing a lot of silent time in the wilderness. So Tom talks a lot about that in the book called The Vision. Now, if you're interested in accomplishing this over time, I would like to give you what I call the routine of invisibility. The routine of invisibility involves several practices, some of them mental, some of them physical, all of them depending on your state of mind. The first one I'd like to call your attention to is the one I've already mentioned, and that is an attitude of thankfulness. Even if you yourself can't think of any reason to be thankful, and you say, well, why should I be thankful? I don't really need to have to be thankful. That has nothing to do with invisibility. Well, then that's as far as you're going to get. You know, all of this might as well not exist. But if you can accept the fact that thanksgiving and being thankful is part of invisibility, then you can integrate it into your practice and find that you'll be a lot more successful. So the way we do this, we encourage people to pause at the edge of the forest. Let's say you're going to your secret spot. So the way this would work is, as you're, you might have a place in your yard which is kind of like the gate or something that you leave to walk to your secret spot, or maybe it's your front stoop. Think about your cat for a second, how when you let your cat out at night, it doesn't just run off into the night, but it pauses on the stoop for a second and attunes itself and adjusts itself. So I'm suggesting the same thing. Pick a place in your yard or where you park your car on your way to your secret spot or where you lock your bike that there's a certain place that you walk to, and when you get to that place, set it up as a trigger so that whenever you get to that old spruce tree, that's where you pause and give thanks. So like it should be like a rite of passage where you're consciously leaving behind the world and walking out into another world as a new and fresh person. So we walk up, we pause, and we express our thankfulness. We pay attention, we look around us, we think about the people in our lives that we're thankful for. It's very important that you keep people in your thankful routine, because eventually your empathy will cause you to get mad at people. So it's really important to keep renewing your thankfulness for people, especially as you become more empathetic. Start with people. Be thankful for the people that have taught you things in your life, the people who care for you, who feed you, who support you. And then from there, look at the earth beneath your feet and thank the earth and thank the waters and the plants and the animals and the trees and the birds. And if you're having trouble with that idea, you might think about it this way. Okay, maybe your religion doesn't allow you to thank animals directly, so be thankful to God for the animals, but think of them specifically. Think of your gratitude for the animals. And then go into the sky and be thankful for the winds and for the clouds and the rain and for the sun and the moon and the stars and for the unseen things in life. Be thankful for your creativity, your intuition, the gifts that come in your dreams and your visions. Be thankful for the unseen world, whatever you want to call it. And then finally, be thankful for the creator of all things that dwells in everything. That's how we begin thankfulness. So the second part of the routine of invisibility, after you've expressed your thankfulness, and you can do this mentally in a few seconds, be like the owl who enters the forest. An owl doesn't just sort of blunder into a forest, no more than the cat leaves the porch in a hurry. The owl will pause at the edge of the forest, and from its silent and invisible perch, it will look out over the landscape around it. And from that higher point of view, it will listen with all of its might to all of the sounds of the landscape. And it hears over by the white oak tree that there's some feeding flying squirrels, and there's some mice chattering in the trees. And it can hear the sound of the deer walking on the leaf litter crunching. And then the owl tunes its ears towards the swamp, and in the rustle of the winds blowing in the sedges and the cattails, it can hear the sound of a muskrat digging and feeding. It can hear the sound of a beaver chewing on a tree over in the alder thicket. And so it uses its ears to map the landscape that it knows really well and to say, okay, that's what's happening here, and this is what's happening there, and kind of just takes a three-dimensional visual mental map. Okay, so I want you to do the same thing. When you enter the forest, you pause at the edge of it, just like the owl, and you sit in silence after having given thanks and clearing your mind and really being present to where you're at. You map where the juncos are feeding, and you hear the sounds of song sparrow companion calls, and you hear the song of a wood thrush over here. And what you're doing is you're creating a three-dimensional map in your mind of what the birds are up to. Now it's time to enter the forest. Now you walk very carefully using what we call wide-angle vision, which is peripheral vision. We also call it owl vision in our school. And you use what's called fox walking. That is a very careful, soft, gentle walk. You can read about that in Tom Brown's Guide to Nature Observation and Tracking, the fox walk and wide-angle vision. And you use what we call a cat style. You take so many steps and you stop and look around and look behind you, look above you, look left, look right, always following the shadows the way a leopard does. You kind of walk in the shadows. When you see the junco up ahead, you use the honoring routine. When the juncos are feeding on the ground, you mechanically avoid them. If the junco gives you a heads up, literally, while it's feeding, it stops and looks at you, that's strike one. And if you keep moving forward and that junco raises its head higher, that's strike two. And strike three, you're out. That bird is going to fly off the ground and emanate an alarm call, and that's going to change everything in the forest around you. So what you do instead is the moment you notice that junco has perceived you, you turn sideways. and you go around it, breaking tension. You should pause there at that point, sometimes stooping down and pretending you're eating. That will release the tension. And just keep eating and watch that junco out of the corner of your eye. Whatever you do, don't stare at the junco, because staring at wild animals means you either want to mate with them or fight with them. And either way, I don't recommend it. So what you should do is only use your peripheral vision or your wide-angle vision to watch that junco and pretend you're eating until that junco relaxes and begins feeding again. And eventually you'll notice that you can sort of circle around the juncos. Okay? And most important, perhaps, in this routine of invisibility is what we call the lazy surveyor. That's the attitude you should carry in your mind. You shouldn't be thinking, well, I'm sneaking around in the woods, because sneaking causes alarms. You shouldn't think that I'm going to sneak up on the fox or I'm going to fool this junco. Instead, you should release that kind of mindset. Don't think like a stalking cat. Instead, what you should think like is not thinking at all. You know, I'm out there, I'm getting paid by the hour, I've got all the time in the world, I'm just going to enjoy the day. Oh, it's nice to be out here in the woods. And, you know, think of yourself as a lazy surveyor, literally. You know, you have all day, you're getting paid by the hour, you have a really nice boss who doesn't really care whether or not you're really efficient, and he mostly cares that you're happy. And so for that reason, you just kind of wander through the forest in a really gentle way, just absorbing the forest as you go. That's what we call the lazy surveyor. So the routine of invisibility, again, to recap it, the first part is the thankfulness. The second part is the owl enters the forest, that is mapping the forest in your mind, figuring out where everyone is at. The third is using your wide angle or owl vision. The fourth is using the fox walk. The fifth is doing it, you know, in a sort of a cat style, that is move a little bit and stop and look around. The sixth is using the honoring routine, that is not striking out with the junco, going around it, breaking the tension, feigning eating. And the last one is what we call this lazy surveyor mindset. So that's the routine of invisibility. And what do you do with that? Well, you eventually go to your secret spot with it. And when you get to your secret spot, you sit and you stay in that sort of meditative awareness, and you practice all those things that I told you on the last tape, things to pay attention to. And remember that when you go home, you map these things and you journal about them, and that's how we learn this. And it's just a day in and day out commitment that will cause you to grow through these profiles, nothing else. There's no sort of magic pill you can take, and there's no buttons you can push. But the one thing for sure is that this stuff works, and you will eventually get there just by practicing it. So that's all for now, and in our next tape, what we're going to talk about is what we call advanced progressions or profiles, understanding this whole thing from the bird's point of view and the animal's point of view, and also watching animals and birds through time and season.